This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Escape Hour on Joy. Welcome. My name is Stefan, and today I'm joined by David.
It's great to be here. Why am I here?
Oh, well, everybody's away, deserted aren't they? Me. I think Fiona is trekking around Japan. Russ is trekking around Asia somewhere. I can't keep track of where he's been, where he's going.
He's really doing a lot of travel at the moment.
He is.
And what about Mark? Where's Mark today?
Mark's revising. So Mark's got a genuine excuse out of the three of them.
Yes. And why am I here?
Because we're talking about cheese today, and
it's
you're
the cheesy
cheese
show.
Expert.
It's the cheesy show. I'm one of the experts.
I needed the cheesiest person.
Yeah, I'm pretty cheesy
to talk about.
Normally Monday 12 till 4 on Joy 94.9, but so, you know what? I'm a gun for hire, just like we all are
well,
here.
So and cheap.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For high, but cheap.
Yeah, I know.
So cheap and cheesy.
That's
so
right. Welcome. Cheap and cheerful is what I've been called, but cheap and cheesy is good as well. Do you want to know about our guest today,
Well,
Stefan?
I'd like to, yes. I think they're combining cheese and travel, or they have combined cheese and travel for years. Is that right?
In their lives. It's in their bloods. We actually have cheese royalty with us today. Now, I don't know whether you've heard of Bill Studd, but Bill Studd is well known, or Will Studd is also well known, for his great series called Cheese Slices. And it's a series of DVDs where he travels the world. Now, he's imported cheese for many years, and he's also a grandmaster cheese person. I'm not too sure in the exact title, but cheese is running through his veins. If it was, if he cut his finger, fondue would come out. Today we have Ellie and Sam Studd, who are Will's son and daughter, who have grown up with cheese in their lives. Isn't that right? Hello, Sam.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. Good to have you here at Joy 94.9. And Ellie, this is your first time here as well.
Yes, it is. Thanks for having us.
Look, it's Welcome. Our pleasure to have you here. We're going to be talking about all cheese matters. And, of course, you've grown up with cheese as well.
There you go.
Yeah, well, ever since we were a kid, the fridge was always stacked full of cheese. And we spent most of our summer holidays actually in Europe hanging out at dairy farms, finding new cheeses with Will.
Yeah. Ellie, you would have been milking the cows while your dad was doing the deal. I don't know.
Something like that. No, I actually I milked my first sheep only a couple of years ago. I joined Will for Cheese Slices Season 8, I think we're up to now.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience on camera, which was a little bit awkward to kind of be milking this teat. And they're like, what's your experience? And you're like, this is interesting. And obviously it's a lot harder than it looks. But yeah, I pulled it off. But yeah, definitely, I think Smelly Ellie, like, it's an awkward name to grow up with when you grow up in a house full of cheese. And I think my earliest memories was like when it was report time, Mum and Dad used to like ship us off with the stinkiest bit of cheese and be like, take it to your teachers. And you're
nice
like, I don't want to take
something.
It to my teachers. And then you get like A+. And you're
like, sure.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We've got great guests. We have Will Studd's children, Ellie and Sam Studd. Absolute cheese royalty with us, Stefan, isn't that right?
It is, they are.
Well, yeah, I know, you're in awe, aren't you?
Completely. I mean, that's my life goal, to be travelling the world eating cheese and finding cheeses to bring back to Australia.
It's not such a bad gig, is it?
No, I mean, it's really,
Ellie, you've just talked about milking sheep in Europe. Sam, what's your first memory of travelling with your parents or with your dad especially and going to eat cheese and find out about cheese and all that sort of stuff?
Well, I think, to be fair, when I was younger, I took it for granted and I didn't think anything of it. I think my most memorable experiences are probably as an adult doing it with Will.
Yeah.
With Will, he's been in the industry 40 years, but both Sam and I have kind of only just kind of made our way through the past past few years to our cheese journey. So it's kind of always been in our lives, and, you know, you've got this amazing palate and Will kind of spills out these stories, but we've both kind of done our own thing and, and now just kind of coming back and be like, yes, let's do this cheese journey as a family. Yeah.
So you've visited major suppliers, minor suppliers, all sorts of different people?
Everything, essentially. Like from the small place in the Basque where the guy's still making the cheese over like a wooden fire to the big like Kyoto sort of mass-produced cheeses as well.
Tell us about the Basque. Tell us about that.
The Basque was really fun. That was my first cheese slices experience. So I always thought that Will was going on holiday. I thought that... It's like going on tour without the sex and the drugs. It's from 6 in the morning till 12 at night, and then you drive throughout the night to the next place.
And you've got to get up for milking, and then you've got to, like, got to capture your story. So you're arriving at these farms with, like, no storyline. And then the Basque, it was like this little shepherd. Like, you're in this, like, crummy little roads, and you're kind of going into the mountains, and then there's this, like, one man who hasn't seen, you know, anyone. Like, he lives on his own, so he's like, hello, welcome. And then
with like a little a herd of sheep or something like that.
Yeah, but he hangs out there all the time on his own, and then we rock up with his film crew, and then you're speaking through a translator, and it's just, you know, that's his bread and butter. Like, that's his world, and then he, you know, we're just this bizarre kind of film crew capturing his day.
What sort of cheese did he make?
It didn't even have a name. He just sold it at the local farmer's market. So it was like similar to like an Oserati.
Slightly smaller format.
Yeah. Yeah. But often like the kind of places that you're traveling to, it is the most kind of, they're not in the cheese books. They're, you know, just sold locally and not available around the world.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, in Europe, it's, you know, partly I suppose because of population. And of course you grew up in Normandy.
I did. Yes, I did.
And you know, there's always local cheeses from little areas, which you can buy locally in normal markets.
You buy them at the markets, and markets are very different from in Europe than the markets in Australia as well. We've got loads of local producers, fresh fruit, vegetable, fresh bread. Obviously, that goes with cheese in France. You can't eat cheese without bread. Yeah. And very local, very small scale producers.
And it becomes a part of life, really, having cheese and bread.
It's like €2. Oh, give me a baguette. For €2. Normandy, camembert, tomato. I'm like, oh, yes.
Well, that's the thing. You know, Normandy is well known for their brie and camemberts.
Yes, brie, camemberts, butter. A lot of butter around there.
Great butter.
Travelled through Normandy?
Yeah, Normandy's beautiful. It's just these big green rolling hills. It's awesome. Mm.
The cows are like grazing underneath the apple orchards.
There's a lot of cider in Normandy as well.
Yeah. And camembert and cider.
And Calvados, I don't know if you're the, which is a strong apple.
Apple brandy,
yeah. That'll knock you around a bit. That knocks you around a bit.
It does.
Is that where
the French have got it right in so many ways.
So the apple Calvados creme fraiche would come from Normandy.
Yes, most, a lot of it. They've got in other places in France, but there's a lot of cream. And we cook with a lot of cream and butter.
That's why French food is so delicious.
Yeah. My little tip actually is apple Calvados creme fraiche with Christmas pudding. Absolutely. Yum. A brilliant combination. Yeah. So if I was travelling France and wanted to do a bit of a driving tour, is Normandy worth visiting then? Because I don't think it's on most people's radar.
People go for the beaches, the Second World War beaches near Caen area, so on the coast. Yes, it is different. I'm biased to it, so I will say to you, yes, you have to visit it. Rouen, where I'm from, I've got many nice restaurants and the cheese around the area. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a place
and
to go to.
I remember eating crayfish there. There's lots of seafood as well, isn't there?
Yes, there's a lot of seafood because there's a coast. It's a coast on the channel.
And a crayfish would cost you €2. Yeah. Maybe not.
Probably not. No, okay. Bread will be cheap.
The bread and cheese. Stick with bread and cheese.
You wouldn't pay $5 for a baguette.
I suppose not. But nevertheless. So a lot of your travels have both been, have been around France. Mm-hmm. There's different regions and different areas known for different sorts of cheeses, aren't there?
Totally.
What can you enlighten us about that?
That's a big question.
No, like, I don't know. We've just covered Normandy as far as
brie. So are you asking what's our favourite one?
Or? Well, I don't know. What other regions have you visited in France?
We've been to most of them, but I would say that our favourite one for me anyway is the Jura for sure. Have you ever seen those pictures of cows in those like big rolling mountains and they've got a big bell on their neck?
Yeah.
That's the Jura. It's exactly like that.
Whereabouts is that?
It's on the border of the... It's where Comte is from, but it's on the border of Switzerland.
French Comte.
Ah,
yeah.
So what, it's a mountainous area?
Very mountains. And that's where they... that's where Vacherin Montdor is from as well, and Comte.
So what cheese is around this? Comte? What else?
Vacherin Montdor. It's really interesting, actually, because they still engage in a thing called transhumance there, which is basically what they do is they graze the animals in the lower pastures during the winter months, and as the snow melts, they'll graze them up into the higher pastures to get different vegetation and stuff like that. It's really, really cool.
I was going to say, it sounds like Brokeback Mountain to me already, but nevertheless. So they're herding their cows right throughout that region.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting thing as well because there's a symbiotic relationship between the agriculture and the erosion. So if they don't engage in that transhumance, it actually causes more erosion. So it's an interesting example of how agriculture and the environment actually work together.
Does that mean they get different flavoured cheeses at different times of the year?
Totally. My favourite comp day is the summer milk, so it's when so it's when they're grazing at the tops and they're eating all the wildflowers, and it's a really floral, sort of bright comp day.
Okay.
And then during the summer months, they grow all the hay for the winter, so they'll grow them all the hay in the lower pastures. They'll cut that and they'll dry it by fan so that the cows have something to eat.
Throughout the winter.
Yeah.
And then,
Comte is an interesting one because the fruitiers, they make the cheese and then it's kind of bid for to mature it. So there's a relationship between it's the best fruitier that makes the cheese and then where it's matured on the mountain again adds to the flavour profile of the cheese.
What, do they mature them in caves or...?
Most of them are caves, but it's where it is in the cave. We've got a Will Studd selected line, so it's we mature ours in the 16th century fort.
I expect you've probably
which is the perfect addition.
Oh yeah, we did.
We just had to. Got to go look at that.
Check out the fort. Yeah,
three days eating Comte Day, pretty tough, you know.
Yeah, look, I think I'd be right there with you on that one. I mean, there's a lot of cheeses I probably wouldn't spend 3 days eating, but Comte Day.
300 litres of milk to make one wheel.
Really?
So how big are those wheels?
They're about 33 kilos. They're massive. And so, like Ellie was saying, the fruitiers are cooperatives owned by the farmers. Mm-hmm. And so they pull all the milk in and then they have a master cheesemaker. They get the green cheese. They brine it. So they rub it with a dry salt. And then the affineur will come along and he'll bid on the batch and he'll pick up the batch of cheese that he wants. And for me, it's an excellent example of affinage. So, like, all the cheese starts off relatively similar and it ends up in a completely different spectrum because there's Comte Day. And then there's Comte Day, you know what I mean?
Of course.
There's really bad, well, not bad, but there's some boring stuff and some really amazing stuff.
Because you can buy some of the French Comte in some supermarkets here, but it's really young. So would you recommend to... How do you eat it? If you were to choose...
We used to pick it on age profile, but I think we're kind of moving... Well, personally, we're moving towards, like, what flavours you like. We work with our affineurs quite closely. So we select one. We want one that's caramelly and nutty because that's what we find the consumers really like.
It's between 12 and 18 months. And the reason that you don't pick one that's of a specific date is because the cheeses reach like their apex at a different time. So, you know, obviously in summer milk it'll taste better at a certain time than the winter milk will taste better at a certain time. So ours is between 12 and 18 months. But there's a guy that goes around. And
it's beautiful, actually.
He hammers the cheese with his little cheese knife and then he'll taste it. And when it's ready to get shipped to Australia, he'll get the whole batch together and he'll ship it over for us, which is pretty cool.
And it's pasteurised milk that they use for Comte, or
it's a cook curd. In Australia it's considered pasteurised, but it's not really. So they use the natural cultures that are within the milk. So it starts off as raw milk, but then they cook the curd. So it's considered pasteurised within Australia.
Okay.
But it is an unpasteurised cheese. So, you know, just as Reggiano is unpasteurised, people sort of go, I never knew that was an unpasteurised cheese. Mm. You know, there's a bit of controversy about pasteurised and unpasteurised cheeses, but I suppose if you're buying good cheese and you're tasting it, it's going to be whatever suits your palate.
Totally.
And I think in the end, you know, a lot of unpasteurised milk in France is very standardised and it isn't necessarily going to produce a better result or a worse result. So, you know, we have particular laws in place that restrict certain things being brought into the country, you know what? We'll just taste what tastes really good and go, this is what I need to take home.
Yeah, totally.
So the Comtes are a wonderful story. You must have many, many stories. And I want to talk to you about Roquefort soon. But what other regions in France would you have been checking out for specifically cheese? What? In the south, they would make different type of cheese, or
in Burgundy, that's where they make the Brillat Savarin, which is a really beautiful cheese.
Can you describe Brillat Savarin for those?
It's creamy, dreamy. It's a crowd pleaser. That's all we serve at our parties. Whenever you just like
goes excellent with champagne, and it's a triple cream, which means that it has 75% dry fat matter.
That means it's 25% fat free.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have it with a glass of champagne, it's as my friend puts it, it's how babies are made.
Well, I've actually served Brillat Savarin a lot because you know, some people might be drinking red wine, they might be drinking white wine. It goes well with everything, and you know, it's a great dessert cheese. In summer, you know, you put it out with some beautiful fresh strawberries, some Victorian strawberries.
Good for racing season with some strawberries. Yeah. Just dip it in,
and also because it's in that cute little box, and you can just sort of. I mean, there's all different sizes.
For Christmas, I put I soak rum and apricots and sultanas, and then put it in the box in the oven, and then dip it out with crusty bread.
So
it tastes like Christmas pudding.
It's a little bit like a chlorine as well.
Yeah, a little bit.
I saw your dad once doing a story about chlorine. I think it was on MasterChef, and he said how somebody asked him, "Oh, how long do you put it in the oven for?" And he said, "You just put it in the oven for about 20 minutes or until it catches fire." Now that was one of the best jokes I ever heard him actually say.
He'd still say that today.
But yeah, you can chuck some Saturn over it or something like that. Is anybody's mouth watering while they're listening at the moment?
We should have brought some in to eat.
I'm very disappointed.
I often have cheese in my backpack.
One question I want to ask, though, because we're talking about dessert and cheese, is it before or after dessert?
I think before.
I would say that also.
Yeah, I think that in Australia it's often an afterthought. So you eat your meal and then you're like, oh, I'll get the cheese out. But I think that if it's a great way to stimulate your taste buds and get excited about the meal to come.
Yeah, no, that's something I was a little bit shocked, not shocked, but surprised with when I was served cheese after dessert. Oh, no, that's not right.
But I feel like there are no rules. Like, well, do what you want, right? You know?
I do it after a main meal, and instead of dessert, I'd rather serve cheese. And then I might get some little chocolates or some nougat or something, just something small and sweet, because that way it wakes everybody up and you can get them out the door.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
You're listening to The Escape Hour with Stefan and David today, and our guests, who have we got with us?
We've got Sam and Ellie
Stud. Stud. And we're wondering whether you have a favourite cheese, Have we got any messages?
I think we do. We've got Michael from Geelong. Red Leicester is his favourite cheese.
That's so a pretty good English cheese.
Yeah, we've got a few others.
Andrew from Warrandyte says that he loves Tassie Brie, and Devron from Richmond likes Daffanoir. Sally from... Oh, thank you for the messages too. Sally from Craigieburn loves any blue cheese. So if you want to get on board, just send us a message on 0427JOY949. Any blue cheese.
Do you have a favourite blue cheese, David?
You know, I like blue. I like quite a few different blues. I don't know. It's a hard one to say. I suppose it's a mood-dependent thing because they're strong and mild.
They can be.
But what would be the king of blue cheeses? Sam, you know what the king of blue cheese is.
I think I might.
What would it be?
I think it's Roquefort.
It has to be.
All blue cheese, that blue mould that you see in that cheese, all comes from that one region in Roquefort, from the caves, Penicillin Roqueforti.
Yeah.
So
even Australian blues, some of them use the same penicillin.
Most of
mold.
Them.
Mould. All blue cheeses use that mould.
Yeah. There's one that doesn't.
Have you visited the cave?
We have.
I would kill to go there.
It's amazing. It's really interesting, actually, because I had this image in my head of this, like, you know, sort of like really sparse landscape.
Uh-huh.
But all the producers are in the one street, and all the caves are in the one street too.
Because basically you have to, like, for a cheese to be called Roquefort, it has to be made out of sheep's milk, unpasteurised, and aged in these caves.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, and it's actually the only raw milk cheese that you can buy in Australia.
Yeah. How many suppliers are there, or how many people make the actual Roquefort? How many different companies?
Seven.
Not many.
Not many. Yeah. And they're the only ones that can actually produce cheese that's called Roquefort.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, the guidelines are quite strict. They're PDO guidelines.
It was the first PDO cheese as well.
The other thing is, though, that, you know, and I like Papillon Roquefort, and it's made in such a unique way, not like any other Roquefort, I don't think.
Yeah, they mature, how they get the penicillin Roquefort is that they put, well, most people make it similar, but it all is a bit, they all put their own twist in. So Papillon put the rye bread in the caves, and then it becomes mouldy. So
how
it's
long
burnt.
Does it stay there for?
I think 40 days.
Yeah, 40 days and 40 nights.
40 days. But they're all really superstitious. When we went there, the thing that I kind of learned is they're all really superstitious when they put the bread in the cage. So, like, one lady was like, oh, I put it in on the autumn equinox when the wind is, like, blowing from the northwesterly direction. I'm like, do you? But Papillon, they bake their bread in the area and they put it in. Put it in the caves and becomes mouldy, and then they break up the mould spores and then sprinkle it on the curd.
Yeah, and it's so unique because normally you'd put the blue penicillin mould into the cheese before you cut the curd.
Yeah.
And then later on, as it ages, you'd spike the cheese so that the mould will grow.
Yeah.
But Papillon do that differently. They don't put the mould in at the start.
Yeah, well, it goes through when it's through the cheese processing, and then it's kind of like
they cut the curd and put it on a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
I want to see that conveyor belt. I think
they do it by hand. Yeah. They kind of just do it.
It's liberally. Just a touch. You're like, how does that become so much blue cheese? But it's like a dash. Mm.
But that's different because they have blue mold that is actually very uniform throughout the cheese.
Yeah.
Other people sort of.
That's a testament to their cheese making skills, I think. So.
That's what you want in a Roquefort.
Can you imagine inventing that little conveyor belt to put the blue mold over the cheese? But I'd love to see that. I think it would be amazing to see. Yeah. Can the public actually see that or not?
They do tours. I know that Société, which is one of the biggest producers, they do tours through. Mm. But a lot of cheese producers, they're just so busy that they don't have time to show people through. If you can imagine that you're making cheese every morning, like the idea of showing a bunch of tourists around, you're like, no, I don't have time.
And you said there's only seven producers, and there's cheese you can find it worldwide, really. So to produce, you probably don't have a lot of time to do tours if you're trying to produce cheese. Like
they do have cellar doors, though, so you can go in and you can kind of see the production and that kind of stuff.
Whereabouts in France is the Roquefort made?
In the Roquefort region, of course.
Where is that? Help me out. Whereabouts?
In the south of France. It's quite a mountainous area. Uh-huh. It's really, really beautiful once again, like most of France, actually.
the other cool thing was, so the Roquefort is from the actual caves, but the florins that kind of chill the cheese as well. So they have to spend a certain amount of time within the caves, but the florins are kind of gaps within the earth that form a natural kind of...
Refrigeration.
Wow. Yeah.
And we were actually there.
Yes, we were a bit naughty.
We were there, I don't know, I think it would have been like 6 months ago or something like that. And they have this big sort of do not enter sign. And I looked at the lady and I was like, hey, old Delphine. And I was like, can I go have
don't
a look?
Jump.
And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, that sucks. And then she just unhinged the door. She's like,
she went upstairs and then we entered the florin.
And we went up there and the start of the crack ends up in the church. So the Roquefort that you eat is...
The breath of God.
Yeah,
breath of God. Blessed by God.
Yeah, something.
Camembert, like feet of God.
Yeah.
Roquefort, breath of God.
The fear of God.
The fear of God, yeah.
Wow.
Cheese is God.
So if you had to choose a favourite cheese, Stefan, would be your favourite cheese? We've had a few already. Tassie Brie, any blue cheese, Dauphinois, and of course Red Leicester.
So I would choose something from Normandy.
Yeah.
Obviously, and they've got this heart-shaped cheese called Neuchâtel, which is produced in a region, a town called Neuchâtel-en-Bray.
So that's not Neufchâtel, which comes from Switzerland, cheese.
No, there's no. It's not a cream cheese. It's not. Well, it is creamy, but it's not. It's a little bit
mild.
Like Camembert. It's
and
it's quite strong. It can be strong depending on how ripe it is. Heart shape, and I think there's a story that it was during the Hundred Years' War.
That's
the wives of the soldiers that. expressing their love into that the shape of the cheese.
Remember me? They sent it through the they sent, like they'd get their food packs and in it the wives or the girlfriends would be making love heart cheese to them.
And it's so that's my favorite. Every time I go back to France, I'll try to get some. When I was young, we could only find that in Normandy and really around Rouen, but you can find it everywhere in France now, mostly. In supermarkets.
I've got a feeling I've seen a couple, around Valentine's Day or somebody that's made similar sorts of things.
I think it's the only love heart one. It'll be that one. Yeah.
And I don't, it's unpasteurized, so I don't know that it would come here. I don't know.
I think they have two versions.
I wouldn't buy the pasteurized version.
Well, they'd be just going, yep, Valentine's Day coming up. Frank, pasteurized ones as well. We're sending some to Australia and America and everywhere else around the world.
So when I was young, I used to, my family ran a hotel restaurant. So we had in Normandy, we had this guy that would come from locally from the farm and sell us the cheese for the restaurants. It was quite so I've got fond memories of that.
I thought maybe you were putting the heart out to attract young men.
No.
Here, come and taste my cheese. Oh, by the way, I'll give you my heart. It sounds very romantic, though.
My heart on a plate.
Yeah. Normandy brie is very, very different, too, to the sorts of bries that they make here in Australia. Why is that?
Well, Normandy and brie aren't... That's not a thing. Brie's from the Ile-de-France and Camembert's from Normandy. Yeah. So essentially the same cheese. There's actually a cool story behind that.
Which came first, Brie or Camembert?
Oh, yeah. Do you know which one?
No idea.
So Brie was the traditional cheese of Paris. And then during the French Revolution, there's a couple of beheadings of some Benedict monks. And so obviously if you're a monk...
I like the story.
Yeah, so obviously if you're a monk, you got a little bit scared. So they all scattered around the country. And then one of them was passing through Normandy. And then a lady called Marie Harel hid this monk in a
up the chimney,
on the annex. And then, in exchange for his saviour, he showed her how to make the brie style cheese. So essentially, they're the same cheese with a couple of obviously differences because they're from different parts of France. And then it wasn't until the industrialisation of France that they had a train that went from Normandy to Paris that Normans had access to the Parisian markets. Mm. And it was they needed a way to transport it because obviously spending, 3 hours on a train, you need to put it in something. So they put it in those wooden boxes, and those wooden boxes were traditionally from chemists. And so, but it was the first opportunity to label the cheese. So instead of buying...
To marketing. Oh.
So it was the first marketing of cheese.
Wow.
Yeah.
And brie's bigger. The word
that's a relatively new conception. Like traditionally, you'd make it as a farmhouse style, and if you had a lot of milk, you'd make a big cheese, and if you had a little bit of milk, you'd make a small one. But now they have the bigger sizes, and that's part of it.
But Ile-de-France in France is very close to Normandy, so you can understand why it's...
It's a three-hour drive, so you can imagine.
Not even that.
Can you imagine doing that on foot, though? That'd be tough, especially if everyone was trying to cut your head off.
On a warm day, my cheeses are getting... They're not getting any fresher in that time. No,
it doesn't get very warm there.
No.
And they've actually extended the Ile-de-France region relatively recently because it all became sort of populated. So they had to extend it by 150 kilometres about 20 years ago so they can still make brie from the Ile-de-France.
But the Normandy ones have got that distinctive flavour too that, I don't know, is it something
a bit more
to do with
kind
the
of
mold?
Mushroom and
cauliflower almost?
Sort of. Yeah, hit you in the top of the palate, sort of.
I love those. I think they're better than, somebody mentioned something about Dauphinois, which is really creamy and rich. But
that's a fun cheese, I think.
But I think, it is. It's great. But, something like the Normandy brie, they're really strong. And, I don't know, the yeasty flavours sort of go so well with champagne as
cooked
well.
Cooked cauliflower.
You can put out cheap champagne.
Oh, dry, before you know. Dry farmhouse French cider,
But Dauphinois is a really new cheese, so it's a microfiltration cheese, which I think is really interesting. So the technology was developed for desalinating salt water, and then someone in the 1960s decided that they were going to try and make cheese out of it.
So they put milk through it.
So they put milk through it, and so what it does is it separates the milk solids from the liquid, and so it comes out, so it keeps all the lactose and stuff like that. And that's how you get that. It comes out of this stuff called retentate or pre-cheese, depending on what you want to call it. And then they grow traditional moulds on it. And that's why it's such an amazing cheese. So for me, it's an intersection between modern cheese-making techniques and traditional cheese-making techniques.
And those cheeses are very, very smooth because
really consistent
of the tiny particles, I suppose.
Yeah. And it goes through that. And
once you learn to taste that, you'll be able to recognise microfiltration everywhere. Yeah. It's actually the secret to Saint-Nazaire as well. They put that retentate in.
Well, you know, as far as I know, Saint-Aguer is actually an invented cheese from about 1986 or something like that. And I tell people that I come across in the delicatessen, I say to them, well, you know, because there's this great little photo, or not a photo, but it's a drawing of what looks like a monastery from 1822 or something or other. But it was, I suppose in those days they would have called it market research, but it was like a focus group where they said, what do you like? Oh, we want something that's mild, something that's really creamy, and something that has lots of blue through it. So
it's which a cow's milk roquefort with a spin, essentially.
A lot more cream.
But it's a pretty good cheese. And, you know, once again, you know, we might say, because we all eat a lot of cheese and we might be a little bit more critical.
It's actually making me hungry.
But, you know, if you put out some Dauphinois and some Saint-Aguer, people are just going to go, oh, you know, this is good. They're crowd pleasers and they're cheeses. Because not everybody's, you know, going to be right into their cheese.
And what about the... we've got a message from Denise from Dallas.
Yes.
She likes the local supermarket Tasty Cheese home brand. So that's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, but it's yummy on toast with tomato, and she's got some under the griller right now. Well, you know, it's whatever you like in cheese, really. I mean, we all have different palates, and we all love different cheeses. Are there any other messages there, Stefan?
So there's et pois, Sarah.
Ooh,
only cheese you're not allowed to take on the trams in Paris.
Well, I think
there's actually a rule. You can't take the cheese in the train because it stinks out the carriage.
And she's on her way to a rally in the State Library, and she's on a tram. I'm wondering if she has et pois with her.
Can we buy et pois?
Yes, you can. Yeah. Oh, wow. What's the story behind et pois?
So et pois is from Burgundy. It's a wash rind cheese, so it's a bacterial breakdown. They wash it with Burgundy and a brine solution. But it's like it's a gnarly cheese. It can be really delicious, and then it can also be really offensive. But it's one
of
my
those
cheese.
Ones that smells like it smells. It actually tastes quite kind of meaty and savoury. Like it doesn't actually taste the way it smells.
I adore et pois. I make et pois sandwiches. Just bread et pois. Bread on the top, and you know, it is smelly. But with the smellier cheeses, if you taste them first and then smell them afterwards, you understand the relationship with the flavours.
They used to call it white meat as well. So the monks used to make it to eat over the Lent period and to replace meat. And so when you do eat a washed rind cheese, you'll notice that it's like a little bit meaty, like sort of smoky.
Bacon. Yeah.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to the Escape Hours on an Escape Hour on Joy 949 with myself, Stefan, and David. And today we are talking about cheese and travel.
Oh, yes, it's the cheesy episode.
It's the cheesy episode with the cheesiest people hosting.
Have we got some more messages?
We have, yes. They're on fire today. So George from Windsor is asking... is telling us that the king of blue cheese is definitely Stilton.
There's
a bit of king of English cheese.
King of English blue cheese. Yeah.
Definitely.
Thank you, George, for your message too. And Stilton is great. You know, it just makes me think of Christmas all the time.
Yes.
It also makes me think of old men with the pots of Stilton and port poured into the top of it.
Do you know why they did that?
That was the cover of the cheese.
It's because it's when the cheese tasted so bad, you put port on it.
Just to make it taste
better.
It's
the same with quince paste. Like any cheese is rancid, you put quince paste with it so you couldn't taste it.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the relationship is between the salt and the sweet. Mm. So, you know, you can understand that a blue cheese is always going to taste great with some really sweet fruit or a sweet-driven, I don't know, like a Pinot with that fruitiness and that
sweetness. Have you done a roquefort with butter and then, like, dark chocolate shaved on it?
No.
Piece of rye bread? Try that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty exciting. Is there another message there as well?
I think we have got a question from Matt from Thornbury. What do you think Australia's best cheese is?
So I think it's hard to pick just one. There's a couple that I really like.
Yep.
I like Nick Haddo's from Bruny Island. He's got one called C2.
Yeah.
Which is really delicious.
So what kind of cheese is it?
It's a raw milk alpine style.
All right.
Yep. Style cheese. I really like Luna from Holy Goat. That's an amazing... They've got a great grip on... geotrichum molds and stuff like that, but that cheese is...
And that's a little semi-matured goat's cheese.
Yeah, it's a lactic set. Awesome. They have the big one and then the small one too.
That's
we were out
good.
At Shore River yesterday making some buffalo mozzarella balls.
Who's the cheese maker out there?
Well, traditionally it was Roger.
Thea.
Yeah.
But now it's Thea.
Well, it's family run, so I think the brother as well was involved in the farming.
Yeah, so. It's great. You can buy Australian buffalo mozzarella, and yeah. there's a few different people that produce it. They obviously milk their own buffalo and yeah. produce it on site, mm. whereas other people would buy the buffalo milk in.
Yeah.
Those buffalo actually were citizens of Denmark on their way to Australia, I believe.
Yeah.
Sounds like a hectic story of getting them there. They had to, like, put them on a 747, and then it got landed in India, and then there was, like, laws to, you know, they got stuck in India, mm. and they put them on a boat to New Zealand.
Yeah. Quarantined, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
So people have gone to some amazing lengths just to make cheese here in Australia. Mm. We'd love to hear from you, 0427JOY949. If you'd like to tell us what your favourite cheese is, send us a message. We're only on for a little bit longer, but it's great talking about cheese. Stephanie says that hello, Stephanie. Hello, Stefan. Sorry. I like halloumi cheese,
ooh,
and
yes.
that's from Rowena in Thornbury. Halloumi cheese.
So what do we think
summer.
Of halloumi cheese?
I love halloumi. That's my hangover or like midnight snack. I'm either like coming home or like my morning. Yeah.
Yeah, I quite snack. Like halloumi cheese. It's a little bit squeaky on the teeth.
Yeah. Do you chuck it in?
It shouldn't be squeaky. Don't you see this? Is that the one
you're traditional.
Okay.
So it's only squeaky if they add cow's milk.
Yeah. So the one you buy in supermarkets here.
We have one.
Yeah, but it should be goat and sheep together
or just sheep
if you can do as well. Do you like it warmed up, Ellie?
Yeah, I just straight in the fry pan. I literally just grilled, squeeze a lemon. Or what I've been doing in summer as well is halloumi burgers.
Ooh.
Or halloumi fries I've been creating.
Or if you're vegetarian, you could do a mushroom burger with halloumi.
Yeah, I always like, with the recipes, like think chicken, what you'd use for chicken for halloumi.
Mm-hmm.
Is always a good recipe starter. But
so your halloumi fries, do you put them in some batter or just?
Yeah, just like, well, you can do it any kind of way, but with the panko flakes on the outside and then they'd crisp
and deep
up.
Fried.
Bit of a shallow fry. Yeah.
Oh,
but with our halloumi, you don't even need oil because, like, the sheep's milk kind of has enough fat on it. So it's, like, literally just straight on the fry pan either side.
It's good on the barbecue,
slice it up.
Too.
We went to Cyprus a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's not what I was expecting. It's like a desert.
Mm. And then, Cyprus?
Yeah.
It's 120 miles from Lebanon. So if you think about that and that sort of climate, it's actually not that much different. Yeah.
So how much fat is there in halloumi? Because we talked about 75% fat in another on dry matter.
I don't know.
It's
not a trick question. Probably quite a lot because sheep's milk has about twice as much fat as cow's milk, and then goats have about 1.5. So
as a 70% goat, 30% ewe.
Yeah. So I imagine quite a lot. But it's good fat. It's not bad fat.
In a good, well-balanced diet, of course.
With moderation in a good, well-balanced diet.
Hey, Ellie, do you have a favourite Australian cheese?
Favourite Australian? I like Holy Goat, really good, and Bruny Island bring out some good cheeses as well, but
probably one of my standbys would be Heidi Raclette, you know, a lot of people think of raclette as a melting cheese and something to dip, you know, prosciutto through and bread and all that sort of stuff. But as a summer cheese, you know, you can cut it up and chuck it into a salad and you've got a beautiful salad. It's got that richness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I use it in sandwiches as well.
Oh, yeah.
And in a toasty, oh my goodness.
Are you entering the toasty competition tomorrow?
Is there a toasty competition?
Yeah.
There's a wild card entry.
Wild card.
There's the Say Cheese Festival in Prahran on Sunday. So.
That's on at Prahran Market. Yeah. Have you been at another cheese festival today?
Yeah.
What was on today?
We're having the cheesiest weekend ever. It was the Vic Market Holy Cheese Festival. So we had my sister's Market Lane Coffee. So we did Market Lane Coffee with Comp Day.
Which if you haven't tried, you should do it.
So you've been matching cheese with coffee.
Yeah. And Manchego coffee.
Wow.
You've got to try it. It's one of those ones. Yeah.
Mm. And what are you doing tomorrow at the Prahran Market?
It's going to be hilarious. We've got a family cooking demonstration.
Yeah.
So I think we're just doing our dinner party tricks, how we cook cheese at home. So there'll be a bit of baked cheese happening. Halloumi and watermelon. Summer fresh salad.
And then there's sake and cheese tasting that I'm doing in the morning.
Sake and...
What time are you tasting sake?
I think 11.
So the cooking show is going to be really funny.
You have to register online for those tickets. It's free, but you've got to get a ticket before.
So sake and cheese is probably something that would come to mind. How did you get to put these two together?
I think it was Will, actually, when he went to Japan. He did a cheese slices special edition, which was on sake. Yeah. Mm. And then he wrote an article for Gourmet Traveller. He was really inspired because I think he found a lot of similarities with the ferment and stuff like that. So,
And the history.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. We've got Sam and Elista today and we're talking cheese.
Oh, it's been the cheesiest episode of The Escape Hour ever, I think.
I think probably you're right, yes. Yeah. It's been very, very cheesy and we travelled and ate and I'm starving now.
Yeah, I know. Really? I certainly will be going somewhere to have some cheese very, very soon, I think. Yes. Where is the most unusual place that you've travelled to have cheese?
Ooh. Unusual place.
Like have you been for yak milk cheese in
Bhutan? In Bhutan, we ate some yak milk cheese. That was pretty wild. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not particularly nice.
No.
They put it in the cheese. As well in Spain, that was... Like they, I don't know, they mature these.
In Sicily, where you eat the maggot cheese?
Oh, yes, I was going to talk about that.
Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, so it's real.
It's real.
It was illegal.
I was reading that. It's illegal. It's on the black market or just local markets. And does it taste anything special?
It's really strong. Like it's like the maggots are one thing, but it's also just pretty...
Yeah, they have it with wine and bread for a reason.
Like a liquor, like they neck it and then eat it.
So
you need to be pretty tanked.
Yeah.
They've got this maggot cheese as well in Corsica, which is an island off the French coast. Yeah. Just used to be Italian, now it's French.
I think it's like the novelty that gets people as well.
Look, I remember seeing Antonio Colucci when he was at the top of his game and he did a number of specials on travelling around with food. And, maggot cheese was certainly featured in that. It's probably not on the recommend list.
Yeah, but maybe not.
I mean, like... Do everything once, right?
Yeah, or three times. and then America has actually been a really amazing place. Interesting place to travel. They have a huge artisanal movement over there.
Which we don't know about.
You don't think America cheese. It's not your automatic thought. Yeah. But we've been really impressed. Like,
there's
do a lot of travelling.
There's a beautiful Cabot Cheddar for a start.
Yeah,
Cabot
from Just the Hill. I worked there for a little bit. That was really fun. And then the other one is Rogue River. They make an amazing blue, which will be coming out soon.
In time for Christmas. That's wrapped in vine leaves, isn't it? Soaked in apple brandy or cognac or something.
You got it.
It's delicious.
And their animal welfare is so amazing. Like, they have these robot milking kind of... machines, Matilda and
Daisy,
Matilda and Daisy, but they get milked when they want to get milked.
Yeah. There's also the Satori family in Wisconsin that make things like the coffee cheese and the Merlot cheese, and there's a number of other different flavours.
Yeah,
I've actually met Bob from there and
Pleasant Ridge.
Bob was a lovely guy, but you know, obviously that's a big dairying area, so there's a lot of cheese produced from there. It's an amazing world of cheese. So tomorrow you've been today at the Holy Festival. So there's a bit more of the Holy Festival tomorrow at Vic Market. Mm-hmm. But the big one is tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. That's massive. I think they're doing like heaps of kind of pairings. So Sam's got the sake and cheese, and then they're doing tea and cheese pairings. And then we've got the cooking demonstration, and then the cheesemonger invitational or the cheese toasty invitational.
Cheese toasty invitational.
Yeah.
There's stalls all throughout the Grand Market. I know that the
great atmosphere.
The bearded bakers are there, which are just great fun to watch.
Yeah.
So if you want to eat some cheese and taste some cheese, get along to the Paran Market tomorrow for the Say Cheese 2018 festival. We've got to go, don't we?
We have to go.
Already?
Next week we're going to Bhutan, so we...
lead in Bhutan.
We probably won't be tasting cheese, but we'll be talking all about Bhutan and what to do and how to get there, which is quite difficult to get to.
It's a beautiful place.
But so we've got a great guest. She's going to take us through Bhutan. And,
awesome.
Of course. Thanks so much, Sam and Ellie Stubbs, for coming in today. And first time on Joy 94.9. It's great to have you here, and it's our privilege to have you here and be able to talk about cheese today.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.